We interrupt this program to bring you a quick announcement that has been 20 years in the making. That's right. Precisely 2 decades ago, on the exact date that this episode goes live, the Fellowship of the Ring film was released in theaters, and the world was never again the same. I'm serious. Stop laughing out there. The film proved to be an incredible beginning to an unparalleled trilogy of cinematic glory that has continued to enrapture diehard Tolkienites and Fairweather fans alike ever since. The fact that The Fellowship of the Ring is officially 20 years old boggles my mind. I remember speeding through the last few chapters of the book just in time to see the film after it was released. It was snowy, cold, and Christmas cheer was in the air. More on that in a minute. The fact that it's already been 2 decades is kind of crazy. The fact that we're going to be getting a Second Age Middle-earth show that will premiere during the 20-year anniversaries for the trilogy is also pretty awesome. The release of Jackson's trifecta of films was a revolutionary moment for all fans of the fantasy genre. It didn't just show that Hollywood was ready to make epic adaptations of classic fantasy stories that could hold up to the hype. It also revealed a massive audience that was ready to indulge in the genre over and over again going forward. In my humble opinion, every successful modern fantasy adaptation owes a great big thank you to the Lord of the Rings trilogy for whetting the appetites of the masses and paving the way for the consistent success that has followed. Thank you, Mr. Jackson, for all of your hard work. We salute you, and we thank you for providing us with a really, really, really long movie trilogy that can keep us entertained for hours on end, even 20 years after it originally aired. We are in your debt. And now, we return you to your regularly scheduled programming. Hi. Welcome to The Halfling. I'm your host, Jaren Pack. When you hear someone talk about The Lord of the Rings, or Middle-earth in general, it can conjure a lot of different images in people's minds. If you're like me, you tend to lean toward the more epic side of things. You might think of Smaug sitting on his hoarded gold, or the Battle of the Pelennor Fields. For others, the first thought that comes to mind might be a hobbit hole, or elves peacefully living their immortal lives in Lorien or Rivendell. One thing that doesn't typically come to mind, though, is the holidays. Celebrations like Thanksgiving and Christmas, while fun, don't have a clearly defined place in Middle-earth. At least, not at first glance. But we're going to change that narrative today. Welcome to the show's first ever holiday special, a very halfling holiday. And yes, I cringed as I said that. Feeble titles aside, there really are a lot of holiday-worthy things of note in Tolkien's world, and we're going to spend some time checking at least a handful of these out today. Before we dive into the Middle-earth specifics, though, the first thing I have to cover, especially after that totally out-of-the-blue interruption to the program, is the fact that, over the years, Peter Jackson's original trilogy of films haven't just become known as required viewing for fans of the fantasy genre, they've also become labeled as cult classic holiday movies. I'm not just blowing smoke here to excuse my own desire to settle in and watch the trilogy this holiday season, either. In fact, to be honest, I've personally never really seen the films as required Christmas viewing, but that doesn't change the fact that millions of others have that opinion. And, come to think of it, I don't blame them. I mean, come on, the movies came out during the holidays. They also have that warm, cozy quality that comes from watching the good guys prevail against all odds. Sure, that warmth comes wrapped in a heroic, blood-soaked saga, but the underlying message of hope is one that definitely jives with the Christmas spirit. And then there's the most obvious fact of all. As people kick back and relax during their time off, what could be better than popping on a 12-hour trilogy that can serve as the perfect excuse to keep your butt on the couch all day long? I'm game. So yeah, when I sat down to write up the script for a holiday special, I knew that the holiday appeal of the films themselves had to be in there. But that's not the only holiday-related element that we can find, not by a long shot. If you dive into Middle-earth itself, there are quite a few celebrations that we can point to. Now, these aren't labeled as Christmas or Easter, per se. Tolkien tended to avoid using clearly associated terms like holiday names in his writings. Nevertheless, the need to celebrate special events is one that percolates throughout Tolkien's entire world. For instance, let's start with an obvious one. New Year's. We're used to celebrating New Year's right after Christmas, at least in the United States. Other countries celebrate the New Year as well, including in Tolkien's world. The most famous incident of this comes in The Return of the King, when Gondor literally changes its New Year's date to align with the destruction of the One Ring. Seriously, we witness the momentous event happen right in the book when Gandalf tells Sam, quote, "In Gondor, the New Year will always now begin upon the 25th of March, when Sauron fell, and when you were brought out of the fire to the king." End quote. Of course, Tolkien could never settle for a single nod to the structure that a nice calendar provides. In fact, he includes an entire section on dating and calendars in the end of The Return of the King, too. Here, we learn all sorts of interesting things. Okay, I find them interesting. But truth be told, it's actually a lot of completely overwhelming stuff. If you dig through the cracks, though, particularly in the area about the Shire Reckoning and how hobbits counted time, we find references to plenty of holidays, like Yule Days, New Year's, and Midyear's Day. Get this, it even says that eventually Frodo's birthday is turned into a holiday. In fact, it's even buddied up with the Hobbit's version of a leap year, too. After the War of the Ring, whenever a leap year comes around in the Shire, the Hobbits just double up the festival that took place on Frodo's birthday. Cool, huh? April 6th also becomes a holiday in the Shire, possibly because it's Sam's birthday, too. Although the text isn't exactly clear on that one. Another holiday that is clearly described is one that takes place in Merry's home of Buckland, a kind of colony of hobbits attached to the edge of the Shire proper. I'm sure the hobbits of Buckland are proud of Frodo, but they choose to venerate their own fearless family member, Meriadoc Brandybuck, in an interesting way. Now, to make sense of this holiday, we need to back up for a second. In Peter Jackson's films, when the hobbits get back to the Shire, all's well with the world. In the book, though, we get a very different story. When the hobbits return home, they find the Shire overrun by Saruman's minions, and they have to fight multiple times to clear everyone out. It's pretty epic on kind of a hobbit scale size. Merry has a really cool horn with him during this time that he was given when he was in Rohan, and he blows the horn to gather the hobbits together to resist the invaders. Later on, in the appendix to the book, we discover the little tidbit that, quote, "The horn of the Mark was blown at sundown every November 2nd, and bonfires and feastings followed," end quote. This is connected to a footnote that says November 2nd is the anniversary of the first time Merry blows the horn during the reclaiming of the Shire. Suffice it to say, in typical Hobbit fashion, the little people know how to have a good time, and it seems that they built plenty of chances for holiday-themed fun into their calendars. Even when they aren't official holidays, hobbits seem to slip into a festive mood at the slightest opportunity. I always like the part in the Fellowship of the Ring book when it starts snowing while they're heading up the mountain toward the Redhorn Gate. You know, right before they're forced to turn back and go through the Mines of Moria. While the situation eventually goes really, really badly for the Fellowship, before that happens, Tolkien makes some comments about the snowfall in the Shire. Sam wishes that the snow would go off to Hobbiton, where it would be more welcome, adding that, quote, "I wish this lot would go off to Hobbiton, folk might welcome it there." Except on the high moors of the North Farthing, a heavy fall was rare in the Shire, and was regarded as a pleasant event and a chance for fun. End quote. Now, I know that isn't technically a holiday, but it just goes to show how much special events are deeply ingrained into the minds of hobbits. There's another celebratory place where we can see this too. Again, I know this isn't an official holiday, but the hobbit appreciation for birthdays has to make it into an account about the various holidays of Middle-earth. After all, there are few holidays that I've ever heard of that can match the hobbit appetite for a special day to eat, drink, and be merry, even if it's just because someone was born exactly X many years ago. The other reason I feel justified bringing birthdays into the conversation is because of the near veneration that hobbits have for these events. In The Fellowship, Tolkien makes this abundantly clear during Bilbo's very own 111th birthday speech. You know, the one right before he puts on the ring and vanishes? In that little presentation, Bilbo refers to his arrival at Lake Town during The Hobbit, saying, quote, "Though the fact that it was my birthday slipped my memory on that occasion, I was only 51 then, and birthdays did not seem so important," end quote. Think about it. We live in a culture where birthdays are some of the most exciting days of the year when you're a kid. You get to eat cake, you get presents, and all of the attention is on you. Then you get older, and the excitement of the event starts to fizzle a bit. Not so for a hobbit, though. For a hobbit, the birthday frenzy only increases with age, to the point where Bilbo brushes off missing a birthday at 51 years old, not because he's too old to care, but because he's too young. One of my most favorite elements that this older focus on birthdays brings with it is the present system. While us lowly humans tend to focus on the gimme aspect of birthdays, hobbits flip the script. In The Fellowship of the Ring, as Bilbo's fabulous party kicks off, it explains this interesting gift-giving phenomenon, saying, quote, "Hobbits give presents to other people on their own birthdays. Not very expensive ones, as a rule, and not so lavishly as on this occasion, but it was not a bad system. Actually, in Hobbiton and Bywater, every day of the year was somebody's birthday, so that every hobbit in those parts had a fair chance of at least one present at least once a week. But they never got tired of them." End quote. All right, enough about birthdays. We're here to talk about holidays proper, and I do have one more juicy one to throw out there before we wrap things up. I want to talk about the concept of festivals. We already touched on this a little bit, but I want to break it down a little more thoroughly. If you look for the word holiday in Tolkien's writings, you won't find much in the way of regularly scheduled yearly events. However, if you switch your term query to festival, you're going to come up with a lot of results. Many of these are tucked into random places, and they often go unnoticed. For instance, remember last time in the first Shelob episode, when we saw the arachnid monster's mother, Ungoliant, help destroy the two trees? This happens when the elves and the angelic Valar are at a festival so big that everyone on the continent is invited. This isn't their only festival, either. At the beginning of the Silmarillion, before the two trees exist, the Valar rest from their labor of shaping the world, and what do they choose to do while they're taking their well-earned break? Why, have a feast, of course. There are other harvest festivals scattered throughout the text, too. In Rohan, we also see a huge feast take place to celebrate the passing and the burial of King Theoden during the War of the Ring. Like, they literally party in celebration of his life, something that the book refers to as a funeral feast. In The Hobbit, we also see references to things like Durin's Day, which Thorin explains is the first day of the dwarves' New Year. I could go on with the references, but I think I've made my point. You may not find specific holidays in Middle-earth, like Christmas or Thanksgiving, but Tolkien wove a ton of different special events into his world all the same. Now, there is one official last item I want to touch on before we end, and this one is absolutely holiday-specific. I'm talking about Tolkien's posthumously published book, Letters from Father Christmas. Earlier versions of the book are called The Father Christmas Letters, and regardless of the edition, this is a fun volume of Tolkien-esque nonsense to read through. The book consists of a series of dramatized letters written by Tolkien himself to his own kids. And we're not talking something like The Hobbit, where everyone talks about how he wrote it kind of technically for his kids because they were that age. These are literally letters penned and illustrated by Tolkien and coming from the fictitious desk of Mr. Claus himself or his secretary, Ilbereth. They document all sorts of North Pole nonsense in the form of Santa's adventures, run-ins with mischievous goblins, and even the bumbling North Polar Bear, who literally falls through Santa's house while trying to help at one point. These letters are a lot of fun, and they're a cool touch point between Middle-earth and our world. Now, for the record, they don't officially happen in Middle-earth. They're fictitiously grounded in real-world parameters. In other words, they reference our world and events in real life. They're also a hilarious bit of fun to read around the holidays. All right, I hope at this point you've got at least a decent idea of how holidays in Middle-earth work. The main takeaway here is that there are definitely lots of celebratory events to be had, even if they don't directly correlate with a specific real-world day. From angelic feasting, to dwarven New Year's, to hobbitish birthdays, to Gondorian calendar shuffling, holidays play a significant role throughout all of Tolkien's writings. They're also around the corner for us here in the States, which is why, sadly, I won't be able to work on the podcast for the next 2 weeks. Never fear, though, I've worked overtime to line up at least one more episode before January kicks off. Next time, we'll walk through the rest of Shelob's story. Then I'll take one quick week off before we hit the ground running in 2022 with Elrond and the founding of Rivendell, both of which are likely to feature heavily in Amazon's show, which also comes out in 2022. Things are looking up for Tolkien fans as we head into the new year. For now, though, don't forget to give the show a rating and review, and then put down this podcast and, like any good halfling would, pay attention to whatever chances for festive fun come across your path. Happy holidays, everyone. See you on the other side. This episode is brought to you by, well, me. And despite the fact that I've memorized whole chunks of Tolkien at this point, it still takes quite a bit of work to pull each of these together. There are also some recurring expenses that come with keeping the show on the air. So, if you're interested in helping, I set up a way to toss a few dollars toward covering costs. Just go to buymeacoffee.com/thehalfling. That's buymeacoffee.com/thehalfling. If you make a donation, thank you very much. And either way, I hope you'll stick around for all the fun. All right, that's it for now. Until next time, friends.